Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 463.
This week on the podcast, it's Weekend at Bernie's in the Senate. Either know or don't know.
And regardless of what you've heard, both parties love the debt ceiling.
Plus, figure skater Sarah Hughes is looking for a second upset win, this time in New York 4.
And Tim Scott, longtime presidential explorer, files his papers.
Plus, the DeSantis blowback begins as voters get their first taste of his awkward laugh.
And what happens in the water is ocean business. Just leave it alone.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey, y'all. I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
Hello.
Hello.
We're back.
We're back.
We didn't record last week.
We did not record last week.
We're not recording next week.
We're not recording next week. We're an every other week podcast these days. Just yeah. Get into it. We have been, however, diligently in our own private lives following a story that's near and dear to our heart. Which is the story of Dianne Feinstein's Weekend at Bernie's adventure through the halls of the Senate.
Listen, if you're tired of us or anyone complaining about Dianne Feinstein, Brain Trust Live is not the podcast for you.
That's right. Get a different podcast.
Listen, also, get bent, because this is the lead story this week.
That's right.
So, like,
listen to a podcast about cooking if this is not something that interests you. Because I would guarantee this is at least somewhere in the lead stories of every news podcast you're listening to right now, because it's so bananas.
Well, it got juicier and, like, pulpier this week in a way that I was really here for. Because, like you know, part of the story is sad, obviously.
Yeah.
So, like,
the declining health of an elderly public servant.
That's right. But once you start involving the entire Pelosi family and, like, the idea that maybe there's some shenanigans going on around the Senate seat being open if Feinstein retires, then you're getting good. Yeah. And that's what we've come to learn this week.
Yeah. So one thing that we discovered during Dianne Feinstein's weird rollabout in the Senate was that the person that's been at her side since this, since her return commenced has been none other than Nancy Pelosi's eldest daughter, Nancy Carine Prada.
I like that she named
her first daughter,
right?
After herself.
Yeah. I mean, men are doing that all over the place.
No, exactly.
Right?
Yeah, I support that 100%.
She's Nancy the second.
It's a real, Nancy the second the aide by Dianne Feinstein's side as she rolls around doing photo ops in the Senate and giving what are concerning quotes to reporters.
Right. And you're probably thinking to yourself,
Isn't that lovely? Yeah, what
they're
a nice
old
thing.
Family friends. They're both from San Francisco. What a nice thing to do for Dianne Feinstein to keep her alive and voting in the Senate.
Old political power broker friends hanging out together and supporting each other through the tough times.
That's right. Now, you may remember that Nancy Pelosi has endorsed Adam Schiff for the California Senate seat.
She sure has.
A Feinstein and Pelosi protege,
supposedly.
Adam Schiff, right? So if Dianne Feinstein were to not be in the Senate and were to resign, that means that Gavin Newsom would get to appoint someone. Gavin Newsom has said that he would appoint a black woman.
He's gotten himself into a bit of a pickle, actually,
because the last time he
was given the opportunity to appoint someone, he did not appoint a black woman, even though he was talking about how much he would be appointing black women to the Senate
after Kamala Harris became the VP, because there isn't one in the Senate any longer. Right.
That's right.
Yeah. So there's obviously concern by, Pelosi, potentially,
San Francisco power brokers.
From San Francisco power brokers, that Adam Schiff is not a black woman.
It couldn't be truer.
So, assuming that someone else gets appointed, that makes it harder for him to win this election. I think everybody knows that, right?
Yes.
Like, even though the election is very soon, obviously there will still be a competitive primary. But if somebody like Barbara Lee gets appointed to that seat, she is probably going to win that primary and win the general election. That just feels right.
Now, I have long contended that her inclusion in the primary actually means that he probably can't appoint Barbara Lee to that seat. And it actually adds, I know that that's what the speculation is. I think it would be incredibly bad form in an active primary to appoint someone who's in the primary. And listen, I know he has incredibly bad form, so that's not the craziest thing that he could possibly do. But I think that might be like a bridge too far even for Gavin Newsom.
Yeah.
I suspect that what we're looking at is not even what this Politico article that's been speculating about this is worrying about, which is Barbara Lee getting a leg up in an existing primary, but an entirely new and exciting person getting a leg up as the fourth main entrant into a primary, further diminishing Adam Schiff's appeal, assuming he has any in the first place.
I was going to say, is what? But it would be, as soon as I read this, I was like, because it feels very sort of like rumory in a way that sort of like you might think is unbelievable.
Right.
It's exactly what's happening.
I was going to say, it couldn't be more believable in the lives of Nancy Pelosi and company.
Nancy Pelosi is having her eldest daughter, Weekend at Bernie's, Dianne Feinstein, around the Senate. So Adam Schiff still has a prayer of becoming the next California senator. Yeah. And I will believe that until the day that I die.
That's right. I think it's basically fact. It's like one of those Trump theories where you're like, I know that in my heart it's true, and so it has to be true. This feels true in my heart.
You don't need additional information than this.
No, I don't need any confirmation that this is happening. Once the idea existed, I knew it to be true immediately.
Yeah.
Just in my heart.
Yeah.
There's one person in the Senate who's not bothered by these rumors, though. And that's Dianne Feinstein herself, because she thinks she's been in the Senate the whole time.
No.
She's not aware that she's been absent.
She told
reporters on Tuesday, who were, you know, questioning her absence, I haven't been gone. I've been working. I've been here. And then they questioned that further.
Right. They said you've been working from home.
Right. And she said, no, I've been here. I've been voting. Please, either know or don't know.
Which is my absolute favorite. And there's audio of this, by the way, if you want to find it. So it's very sassy. So I'm like, she still got it.
Either know or don't know.
I know. I said, anytime anybody questions me about anything, I'm just going to respond with, please, either know or don't know. But yikes, guys.
She doesn't know where she's been for the last few months.
No.
And also, this would just be a sad story about someone's declining health if the, like, entire Senate didn't hang in the balance.
Yeah.
Like, this is actually, like, a matter of national importance and security.
It is. Well, and the other thing that I have been thinking a lot, because, like, I think everybody sort of, like, as soon as she got back there was like, oh, good, she's back, and now she can, like, you know, at least do the votes or whatever. I think it's important to remind people that, like, showing up for 30 seconds and voting yay or nay on something is not the only job of a United States senator. And especially when she's mine, I would like her to be, you know, to know where she is at a given moment.
I would like her also to be able to work full days.
That's what I'm saying.
Like,
right.
Not
I
even
know. She
just
came
be present
back. I don't know
for
if we talked
days.
About this on the podcast, but she came back to a limited schedule.
Yes, I'm shocked. But also, I mean, you know, we're sort of hearing the details of how her staff has been operating both in her absence and up until her absence for a while now. And, like, they have plans to, like, keep her out of the hallways. I mean, they have been troubleshooting this situation for years at this point.
Oh, yeah. Well, and they kept some of her health issues a secret until very lately.
Yeah.
Because just this week, we also found out that she had encephalitis. She had swelling of the brain, which is a common side effect of shingles. But, you know, they have been cagey.
Yes. And they've been telling us the most optimistic version of her health, concerns.
Right. We want her to be fine. We just don't want her to be our United States Senator any longer. That's all.
Yeah.
That's all we're asking of her.
I hope that she is given the opportunity to rest and recover in an environment where...
There's no Pelosi's around.
There's no Pelosi's around. Or the Pelosi's are just around because they're good friends. P.S. They will not be there as long as she's not in the Senate. But, like, I am happy to have anyone recover in a restful environment anywhere in the world.
Sure. She deserves it.
She's
done a lot of...
the American people for
decades.
Generations, some might argue. I just want her to do that. And I want, at the same time as she's recovering, to have representation in the U.S. Senate.
Yeah.
I want both of those things to be true. And the thing is, we live in a world where they could be.
They could be. That's right.
These are not outrageous, you know, impossible things.
Yeah.
These are things we could all just have. So that's pretty exciting. Now, a lot of what she's missed of late is just a really dumb conversation about the debt ceiling. So who cares what's going on in Congress?
Listen,
nothing.
We have taken a stand recently on
similar
this podcast.
Similar to our gun violence
stance. That we're not going to talk about gun violence until somebody, like, actually starts having any sort of, like, real solutions that we can discuss, right? It's just, why?
Right, it's not in good faith, any of the conversation around gun violence at the moment.
And we've entered that world with the debt ceiling. I've got a bunch of stories on this document that we're looking at right now, none of which we pulled any information from, because we decided that it was too stupid to actually care. And we're going to talk about the politics of it all, but I do not have any details on the specifics of what has and haven't been offered. I did not look up and really dive into what the 14th Amendment is, because it is all just too dumb.
It's too dumb.
It's
We're talking about struggling to find solutions to a fake problem that could just not be a problem.
And having performative shock that nobody is negotiating in good faith with each other.
Yeah.
Like, the president seems appalled that, you know, an entire party that, you know, supported a coup and presented him with, you know, a bill to cut Social Security and to cut SNAP benefits
and
to freeze
and
to freeze government spending and he wants to have some sort of like magic middle ground with them. Like, nobody is doing the right thing, and everybody is acting as though they're, you know, shook about it. And it's like, no.
Well, and also, this is, we don't have to let the Republicans off the hook for their shenanigans, but I think also, and maybe we mentioned this in the last podcast, it was so long ago.
I know.
We also don't have to let Democrats off the hook for their willingness to participate in the charade, because the debt ceiling conversation is fake.
Right.
It's fake. A dumb policy that isn't actually, we talked a few weeks ago about how it doesn't actually, a lot of economists don't even think it's a real thing.
Yeah.
But it also doesn't have any meaningful benefit or relevance to how the U.S. economy's health actually is.
Yeah.
So the whole thing is a dumb charade. Democrats are participating in it so that they can make excuses for not doing shit for you.
That's 100%.
And you should not allow your Democratic representatives to get away with that.
Yes, I 100% agree. And Biden, you know, he's talking about, oh, maybe they don't have enough time to go through the court, you know, process with the 14th Amendment, which I think is something to the effect of, like, I think it says, like, you know, public debt, like, shall not be questioned or something like that. And people, like, scholars think that that could be, like, related to the debt limit or something like that. Since, like, so they're basically saying it would be unconstitutional for us to not pay our debts.
Yeah.
Is the idea there. And he sort of is, like, not wanting to do that because norms, I guess.
Well,
you know,
also,
and
these
it's
are fake.
Like,
these are norms that we made up, first of all. But second of all, maybe this norm should change.
Well, and also the Republicans have long since abandoned norms, right? And then additionally,
the concept of norms is gone.
So he could do that, and he's not going to because he just doesn't want to.
Right.
And then additionally, you know, I've been reminded this week that there was a whole contingency, and granted it was led by Bernie Sanders, but it had members of, you know, a wide swath of the ideological range of the Democratic Party who, after the Dems lost the House in November, wanted desperately to raise the debt ceiling in the lame duck.
Right.
And there was no movement on it all. It got no push from the White House at all. So we did hint at this a couple weeks ago, but it has become, I think, very clear that both sides are enjoying this to the degree to which one can.
They want this because this is how they, the Democrats like it because it makes them look like they're fighting for things, but they're actually fighting
backwards
momentum.
And it makes them seem like
they
love to, like, go around pretending like they're the adults in the room. Well, the Democrats would never threaten, going into default on the national debt.
But also,
we're grown-ups.
Routinely threatening it because they're allowing a conversation that arbitrarily threatens it for no godly reason to continue on their watch when they have had options this whole time. That could have, because also we could just raise the debt ceiling to infinity. Even if they want,
there's been a lot of talk about abolishing it. It's nonsense.
It's a
nonsense. Other countries don't
thing.
Have it. This
of course
isn't a,
not.
This isn't a thing that people were up
to. Also, we didn't used to have it. I mean, we did a whole history of it a few weeks ago on the podcast. It's a fake problem that exists from back when there was a time where the budget came from the president and not from Congress.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with the way we do politics right now. It's stupid. And we're using it in this way specifically to avoid having to actually address policy questions, and also so that Democrats can pretend like they are fighting for things that are actually backwards momentum.
Yeah.
They can fight against, like, really regressive changes and act like they're fighting for, you know, they're sort of fighting for you, but they're actually just fighting against fake problems.
Yeah. I know.
It's
true.
This is a charade.
It's a charade. And the other thing that I want to mention is that there has been, you know, some faux outcry from progressives in the House that they are just horrified that the president, Joe Biden, who has been on the Senate floor since the beginning of time, talking about his love of austerity measures and talking about his love of cutting Social Security and his love of freezing federal spending, is now offering those things to the Republicans. You motherfuckers got what you paid for with this guy.
Yeah.
We knew. We've been new.
He honestly couldn't have been clearer about it since, and I mean this literally, the year of my birth.
That's right. Yeah.
Like, that's how long that he's been clear about his desire
to
cut Social
Security.
He's been
wanting to make a grand bargain to cut programs like that since most of you who were listening to this podcast were born.
That's right.
Yes, correct.
Yeah. Like, this is only an extension of the sort of, like, faux outcry that the entire Democratic Party is sort of like theatrically engaging in around this issue in the first place, though, because this is all an, this is an issue designed to create faux outcry.
Yeah.
It's the whole, there's nothing else to it. There's no real reason for it. There's no real policy reason that we have to even have this conversation. And you know how much I hate having dumb policy conversations that don't matter. I mean, this is, I even said this about reproductive rights, where I was like, this is a fake problem. Somebody created a problem to fight about the problem that no one needed to have in the first place. We didn't need to have the government have an opinion on women's healthcare.
I know.
They could just continue having the same opinion they have about men's healthcare, which is that they should have it.
I know.
Like, this, the whole conversation that we tear ourselves into shreds and, you know, twist ourselves into pretzels over regarding women's healthcare is a distraction tactic that has nothing to do with anything.
Right.
And the debt ceiling is an even dumber one because it doesn't even have, like, there are real victims of the reproductive rights conversation.
Yeah.
The real victims of this, I mean, Brent pointed this out earlier, like, A, the real victims of this conversation won't find out they're victims for another year and a half. So the idea that it's an electoral winner is bullshit.
I know. See, that's the thing that, like, but, I think that the Democrats have long, to a degree, rightly, you know, assumed that the Republicans are going to be blamed for the debt ceiling shenanigans. And I still, to a certain degree, think that that is the case. But if in this we pass a budget for the next year or the next few years, and the only nobody's going to care about the details, which is why we're not generally caring about the details.
You don't care.
But
you, listener, do not care about the details.
What people will ultimately end up caring about is when they themselves have, you know, lost their SNAP benefits.
Right.
Or their Social Security check has been frozen to 2022 levels or whatever else happens. And when that happens a year from now, it's going to be a real hard sell for Democrats to be like, oh, well, that was the Republicans in
even
the debt ceiling negotiating.
Power.
Like, the president's going to get blamed for that. And I don't know that he gets that.
No, I don't think that they understand how in the weeds the rest of this conversation is in the first place. Like, they're looking at polls to see how, you know, certain messaging and certain policy polls with people or whatever. But even within those polls, they're not allowing for the fact that the details of these kinds of issues are, like, not interesting to people for a reason.
Right.
And also, people's memories are short because they don't professionally work in politics. So, like, while maybe people who are in Congress remember the time that Kevin McCarthy did a thing that blah, 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 that caused, you know, 6 months later a thing to happen. The
nobody's
going to
care when they have less money next year.
Well, they're literally careening from crisis to crisis. No one has time at the moment. Like, I was saying to Brent, like, you know, even our everyday decisions, even if you are a person who thinks to yourself, COVID's over and I don't have to worry about COVID anymore. The reason you're so bothered by seeing people in masks is because you know you actually do have to worry about COVID all the time. And the sort of like amount of brain space that just having to worry about everyday decisions that you would normally make thoughtlessly is still eating away at your ability to care about anything or remember anything.
Yeah.
Like all of us, and think about that, but like times a thousand around every political issue that we're all dealing with. There's terrible inflation right now. There's a student loan crisis. There's a war going on in Ukraine. Like there are a million crises. Yeah. There's going to be nothing but environmental crises coming up.
Right.
Nothing but, you know, like on the ground, like homes, you know, like sliding down hills and floods and fires and all these things coming up. If you think that the American people have time to care in 18 months about, you know, the down the road effect of a policy and hold on to who was to blame, you're insane.
It ain't gonna happen.
They're going to blame whoever seems like a convenient person to blame at the moment that the problem hits them.
It'll be
and
the
then
president.
They are going to be confused as to why it can't be reversed quickly because they're not going to remember that it took 18 months for it to happen.
Yeah.
Like they have lost the thread of how much energy anyone actually has to pay attention to stuff like this anymore.
Totally.
Because it was like a cute thing to care about the debt ceiling in like 2012 when like, you know, half of the country's biggest concern was that there was a black president and like that was like that was like their main point of concern about the future. Like that's a different time than right now, the post-pandemic era slash the beginning of the end of the climate for us to even be asking voters to hold on to this sort of news.
It's crazy.
It's ridiculous. Let's talk about who's running for things.
Yes.
Some exciting announcements this week.
One of the most.
First of all.
For us, anyway.
For us,
Brain Trust Live. for niche reasons.
For niche reasons. 2002 Olympic gold medalist in ladies figure skating, Sarah Hughes, is running for Congress.
God bless her.
I mean, so.
I remember, of course I remember that. I probably watched it 20 times.
That's one of the greatest sports upsets in history.
I was going to say, I remember where I was when it happened.
Exactly. There is not a more, maybe aside from the Tara Lipinski moment. They're, Sarah Hughes is second only to Tara Lipinski in the greatest sports upsets in U.S. figure skating history.
Yeah.
Because
at the hands of Michelle Kwan lost another Olympic medal because of some young
teenagers come out of nowhere.
Yep.
Sarah Hughes, who
with bad hair. How bad her haircut was?
I mean, it was a really bad haircut. It was not great. Came up truly out of nowhere and just delivered very solid performances just really rose to the occasion.
I know. The thing that I love the most about that is that it's in the old scoring system also. So it's like all the scores get popped up after her skate and then everybody just sort of like has to stand around and look at each other before you figure
out
what they mean. It's like all the skaters got somewhere between like 5.7 and 6.0. So you're like, how did anybody win this? I'm not saying that I like the new scoring system
better.
We're not getting into that on this podcast because we don't have all day. but like, it's just, all the scores are up there and you're like, who won?
Right. And then it's like someone you've never heard of.
Sorry.
Because Sasha Cohen was in that Olympics too, I believe.
Probably.
Like, it was a big upset. And it was, by the
wasn't
way, it
that,
was
the
one year after.
Wasn't that the era? Wasn't she around? Or was
I
that
think
pre
so.
That?
And it was
also
right,
some Russian
it was right
was
after 9/11. Also.
Oh, yeah. Oh, this is Salt Lake, wasn't it?
It was Salt Lake.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was
America.
It was a guys. Wild year for figure skating and America.
Yeah.
In any case, Sarah Hughes, listen. Was she my favorite figure skater in American history? Certainly not.
No.
Almost nobody remembers that she won that medal.
Not the most elegant skater
out there. Very solid.
Right.
Not the most elegant.
Right.
She did something that I fully respect, though, which is instead of trying to make a career doing Stars on Ice for the rest of her life and then slowly descending into a career as a figure skating coach in some random rink in America, she fucking went to Yale.
Yeah, she got educated.
She got a law degree from UPenn.
Yeah.
And went to go work as a lawyer.
Yeah, she's no joke.
She's no joke. She's like a real, like, adult person now.
Yeah.
And she is not really, at this point, like, she is remembered for being a figure skater, but that's not really what her, like, resume is anymore. Now, does her resume lead me to believe that she's an incredibly mediocre candidate politically?
Of course.
For sure. She's literally a lawyer who's getting an MBA from Stanford right now. She works at a corporate law firm. I mean, it couldn't be worse signs in terms of her ability to have political vision. That said, I respect the choice to use your renown as a skater to get an education. I wish more skaters would do that. It's a sport where you age out really young and more people should use the opportunity to get educated.
Yep.
And I respect that she is trying to, you know, wedge some name recognition into a seat that the Republicans actually flipped in 2022. It was Kathleen Rice's seat. She's running in New York 4. She doesn't actually live in the district yet,
she's looking for a house.
It's always a concern. But she did. She grew up in Great Neck. She grew up in Santos's district.
Yeah. Which I don't know why she doesn't run in that.
I know, but that's probably going to be a big primary. And, like, this primary is, like, three randos who are, like, from Nassau County or wherever.
Yeah, she's going to just name recognition her way to winning that primary.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we'll see how this goes. Also, we'll see politically what her deal is. If she needs some political consultants, we're available.
She's going to look at, like, the DNC platform page.
Yes.
And she's going to be like, that sounds great, guys.
Yeah. But we will be keeping an eye on it due to our obsessive figure skating fandom. And so if something does happen in that race, we'll be the first to let you know.
That's right,
for sure.
Yeah, we're on
hopefully. I mean, like, listen, somebody needs to flip that seat back. That's one of the seats that got flipped in this red wave in New York State thanks to Jay Jacobs.
Could she? Probably.
Let's hope. Yeah,
right. She has name recognition. She won a gold medal, and I assume that she's going to be just the type of person that is probably similar enough to this Republican that no one will care whether it's her or anyone else, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
could be.
That's what's going to happen. Obviously.
She's a native of Long Island,
right?
So
I mean, she's not being put forward by the Justice Democrats.
Certainly not.
Sarah Hughes.
So we'll see what happens. She's also a person who I forgot about this, but of course, every New York Post story that mentions her will mention it. Briefly dated Andrew Giuliani.
Oh, right.
A tidbit I had completely forgotten about. But, you know, lawyers will be lawyering. That's what lawyers do.
Totally.
They date each other.
Yeah.
In any case,
she was in her mid-20s.
Yeah, she didn't know.
Yeah.
And she was recently out of the Olympic circuit.
Right.
She was trying to start a new life for herself.
That's right.
She didn't know where she'd find it.
Yeah.
And thankfully didn't find
it. I was
going to
say, she didn't find it there. So, you know, kudos to her.
Kudos to her. So we'll be keeping an eye on that. We also found out this week that Tim Scott, longtime presidential explorer, finally filed his papers.
These exploratory committees have got to go. And I understand that there is, like, an actual point for them. But, like, Tim Scott is a big enough name and I think did enough fundraising that, like, there's no reason why he actually needed to do an exploratory committee because they, to me, and maybe I'm the only person who cares enough about this, but, like, they just almost seem embarrassing because, like, first off, they're just generally stupid because everybody, for the reasons that we've talked about, everybody, that's essentially announcing.
Yeah,
right?
If you formed an exploratory committee, we have heard of one time in history, which happened this year.
This year,
An exploratory committee did not lead to further exploration.
Right, but I'll tell you specifically what this exploratory committee did not find in their explorations. And that is anyone who wants Tim Scott to be the president.
I mean, Tim Scott is not going to be the president.
So that's why I just sort of like, it's almost embarrassing, I think, for a candidate to be like, well, I traveled the country and everyone wants me to be the president, so I'm going to file my papers now. And it's like, that's not what happened, sir.
No. Like, you did not find anyone who wanted you to be the president.
No.
And also the only
reason...
You
explored everywhere, found nothing, and then... are still doing it.
And so you're maybe just antagonizing the woman who gave you your job in the first place?
I know. I had forgotten about that. He was appointed by Nikki Haley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, fun reunion for them.
I know. He was appointed because Jim DeMint stepped down to go run the Heritage Foundation. Yikes. And he was fired, by the way. And this is, the reason is hilarious, is because it was a unanimous request of its board, DeMint, which had lost confidence in his ability to maintain the organization's role as a fount of conservative thinking.
Also, conveniently happened 1 year after Donald Trump was elected president. So a weird time for the conservative movement.
Yeah. Too many South Carolinians running for president also, by the way. There's two, but
that's too many. That's not a big enough state to be having this many people. Like, I know it's an early state.
No.
But, like, South Carolina only has, like, 5 million people in it.
It's not a large enough fount of conservative thinking.
No, exactly. Well, it is, I would say, a large fountain of conservative thinking, and that is one of the issues with it.
Not
is
good conservative
there's
thinking.
There's no people in it.
There's no quality.
But there's a lot of conservative thinking going
on. That's true. Yes.
But we have some good news out of Florida, a sentence you don't get to say very often.
I mean, fine.
You know. Well, good news in the sense that there is something that Democrats who aren't stupid, which might disqualify every Democrat, could use as a momentum building opportunity, which is not something they get often in Florida. But the Democrats won a kind of surprise victory in the Jacksonville mayoral race.
Yep.
And Jacksonville is Florida's biggest city.
Right.
And I think what's notable
about it...
Isn't
that like the first time they've had a Democrat there? Or first time in a billion years or something
like that? There's been
like
one Democrat in like 30 years or something. I mean, it's been very rarely Democratic.
Yeah.
And also, this is a county, the city of Jacksonville's county...
Yeah.
Is a county that DeSantis won only 6 months ago by 12 points against Charlie Crist. So it's not necessarily a city that everyone was thinking like Democrats have a shot here.
Yeah.
The Democratic candidate was a former TV anchor, Donna Deegan.
People love a former TV anchor.
I mean, in Florida.
Well, sure.
I mean, what better kind of resume could you ask for?
Yeah.
She won against Daniel Davis, who had been a legislator, and he was also the CEO of Jacksonville's Chamber of Commerce. Mm.
That's never good.
She won by 4 points, even though Democratic turnout only beat Republican turnout by 3 points, which means she picked up Republican and some independent votes. And I think she also got some local GOP endorsements, so I wonder if Daniel Davis... who I think my read of the news about this race was largely that people were mad because he wanted to sell off the city owned electric utility. And that was like a major point of contention in the race. And so, or this was not recent, but he at one time had advocated privatizing their electric. And I think that might have been what the whole race hinged on. They just tried to paint her as like somebody who likes BLM.
Right.
And it's like, that's not the radical politics that they're claiming that she has.
No.
Like,
and also, I mean, you know, the race supposedly focused on local issues, as often is the case.
Right.
And there was certainly the city-owned electric company, but the other one was crime. And I, like, look, you know, the Democrat may have gone to a BLM protest, but if she is like all other Democrats who at one point went to a BLM protest, she is also probably now calling for like a zillion more police officers in
course.
The city of Jacksonville.
Yeah, no, I'm...
Because that's what we're doing as a party
exactly.
these days. I shouldn't say we because I'm not a member of it, but that's what Democrats are up to these days.
One interesting note about this county, though, is even though DeSantis won it by 12 points during midterms, Andrew Gillum actually did win Jacksonville when he ran, and Biden also in 2018 won Jacksonville. So I think it's maybe a sign that there is a world in which Democrats who are not actually Republicans but are just boring middle of the road Democrats can actually have legs in Florida. Like, I think one of the things about Charlie Crist is he can run as a Democrat to his heart's content, but the man's a Republican. Like, there is not really an enticing offer for a Democrat in that race. So of course Democrats stayed home, because it was like, who the fuck cares about Charlie Crist?
Right.
I have often wondered about whether our perception that there is no momentum for Democrats in Florida, a state that currently doesn't have any statewide Democrats elected, but has in the past, certainly, is largely connected to the fact that all of the, like, big names in Democratic politics there are Republicans.
Totally.
Like,
yeah.
Maybe it just helps to have someone who, like, Democrats are interested in voting for run, and then maybe you can have Democrats win.
I'm also curious what level, I realize this isn't, you know, isn't near Disney necessarily, but obviously that's a huge issue in Florida. I'm curious if the latest, you know, this has to be a loser for DeSantis, this Disney nonsense. First off, because everybody loves Disney. We don't need to get into all of that. But I think just recently, probably prior to the election, or maybe it was after, I can't remember, but didn't they just announce that they pulled like some big plan to like open some corporate office or something and spend $1 billion and like, I think 12,000 jobs or something. They like backed out and everybody
Disney
was sort
out
of
to
like,
get DeSantis
yeah, they're
right
going
now.
To, they're going to fuck him over right now. And I'm curious what level of that played here. It's probably impossible to know. But I mean, it couldn't have played no.
My favorite part of this is that DeSantis is being connected to this loss by everyone, Democrats and Donald Trump and like everyone. And he did the most milquetoast endorsement of Davis and like barely involved himself in the race. So he's just being portrayed as a loser in a race he barely touched, which is, I think, exactly what he deserves. But even Trump posted on Truth Social with one of his great commentaries on the state of the race, where he said, "Wow. In a big upset, the DeSanctimonious-backed Republican candidate for mayor of Jacksonville, Florida, lost. This is a shocker. If they would have asked me to endorse is capitalized, no one knows why, we would have won easily. Too proud to do so. Fools. This is a big loss for the Republican Party. Remember, Rob only won because of me." I am so happy that he lives in Florida and because of that is choosing to spend his time taking random pot shots at Florida politicians.
I know.
I love this for all of them.
What was that video of him this week? Remember where he was like talking about Ron DeSantis not having a personality? And then he was like, but then also got that dig in at Asa Hutchinson. Remember?
Yes. Well, and then also there was that, the Ron DeSanctimonious video of him cackling.
God.
Was so concerning, you guys.
Yeah, we should talk about that really quickly because we're not the only people to have discovered this recently because DeSantis went to Iowa fairly recently and there's some video of him acting like very non-human and we've found, because now a lot of the pundits who are like, well, this is something that we have known about Ron DeSantis, but a lot of people didn't know about Ron DeSantis because he's never been on a stage like this. And apparently he is known to be one of the more awkward people in life.
I mean,
and
think about everything you know about him.
Right.
He doesn't know how to stand with arms.
I was going
to
say, we've always said that he didn't have any charisma, but it seems beyond that.
Oh, it's
actually.
Beyond that. Right. It is beyond that.
Yeah.
And we had all the clues when we think about it. The choice to wear the white boots was a clue. The fact that he's routinely photographed in a posture that suggests he's never encountered arms before is... And then this weird cackle...
Laugh is really what made me realize that, he doesn't know how to function around other people in social settings.
Yeah.
And look, that's fine.
Yeah. A lot of people in politics have that problem.
I don't know that I would enjoy that part of running for president.
I would enjoy nothing
ways.
More than that
you
part
would.
Of running for president.
I know. Right. But I immediately, when I saw him throw his head back and cackle in a way that, like, definitely did not sound like a normal human laugh.
No.
In any way. You should find it, by the way.
Yeah, it's on
exists
everywhere.
On the internet. Yeah. So Google it. You'll know immediately what we're talking. You don't need anything other than this laughing video.
No.
You'll get it.
You'll immediately get it.
Yeah.
And this worries me because that kind of glad-handing in Iowa is...
That's how you win Iowa.
90% of winning Iowa.
You will, if you
which is still relevant to a Republican candidate.
Well, right, yeah. If you haven't awkwardly laughed in front of every single living human in Iowa, then you're not going to win the caucus.
That's right. No. Everyone in Iowa is expecting you to laugh at a joke that they personally told you.
Yeah.
That he's going to have a long...
But they're expecting you to do it better than that.
I mean, they sure are. First of all, they are professionals at interacting with politicians, unlike most Americans.
And
so Iowans are not afraid to have a chuckle with a
right.
high-level political candidate because they do that all the time.
All the time.
Mm-hmm. So you can't even rely on them being nervous in the interaction. They're not going to be nervous. Only you're going to be nervous.
Yeah.
And if this is what he does when he's nervous, then you guys, this man can't be the president. I mean, he can't be the president anyway.
I don't think he's
a ridiculous person, but like,
yeah.
I mean, what an embarrassment.
Wow.
Learn to laugh, right?
Whole campaign ruined by the laugh.
Ruined by the laugh. And his choices.
I know. Hillary Clinton had a similar problem.
Yeah, no,
not to rag on her, but it's one of my favorite things to do, so here we are.
Right. No, I mean, I feel like, because we've been talking about this a bit for a few, like for every podcast for the last few weeks, where I think there is maybe a perception, especially among Democrats, that, and it's an unspoken perception among Republicans, that like running for president is serious business and your ideas are the most serious thing and they're what matter. And being smart is what matters. But actually, it's all just like a big theatrical production.
Yeah.
The whole thing is theater. And if you're not good at the theater, you can't be the president. And it's too bad because maybe you are really smart. Maybe you would be a good president. And there's not one single person who has the skills to be elected president who actually has the skills to be president. Like right. These are two different skill sets.
Yeah.
And sadly, to become the president, you have to have the one that isn't. That doesn't qualify you.
That doesn't involve thinking.
And sorry about it. Like, sorry that if you have the skills that would make you a good president, you can't be the president. I don't know why we've set it up this way. But if you're not going to admit that to yourself, you can't even learn to fake it.
I know.
You know? Like, it's learning to fake it is the whole thing. We can't be above thinking that Ron DeSantis' laugh is too stupid for real life. Because that is the key to him being the president, not ideas.
And I was going to say, and his secondary problem is that he also doesn't have the ideas.
Right. He's batting zero on all of the necessary things.
Right. Has zero of the skills.
Yeah. I would say, like, Hillary Clinton had the ideas and probably the temperament to be a decent president. I wouldn't have agreed with most of what she did, but she would have been a competent president.
Yeah, of course.
She is not a competent candidate.
No.
And has never been. No. I feel like this is, you know, this is one of the misunderstandings that led to her loss, in fact, was that 100%. She couldn't, no one took seriously the theater of running for president. And I feel like I'm enjoying that the Republicans are being turned into like this giant clown parade by the man who proved once and for all that theater is actually all you need.
The clowns can actually become the president.
The clowns can become the president. Because if you're wondering how Donald Trump became the president, it's obviously not because of his ideas. But as I just pointed out, you don't need ideas.
No, it was
clowning. You need charisma. You know, he's got his own brand of charisma.
Yeah.
Ron DeSantis trying to mimic that brand of charisma around Iowa is something I look very forward to.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
It's going to be so great.
We have to talk about Pride Night at Dodger Stadium.
We sure do.
You guys.
If you don't live in LA, you probably haven't been privy to a giant controversy around Pride Night at Dodger Stadium in LA. But I literally saw like a parade of cars over it yesterday, like a protest.
You did.
Yeah.
Well, we have to stop doing that.
Yeah.
And not because it's not worthy of protest in the sense that, like, they shouldn't have done this. But, like, this is a thing that we have to immediately not be caring about.
That's right.
Be mad about it.
Sure.
But, like, in the sense that, like, I think what we need to be mad about generally is not specifically at the Los Angeles Dodgers. Although, like, sure.
Yeah.
But, like, idea that, like, it's just corporate pride. In general. We'll tell you what's going on really quickly, top line. LA always has Pride Night, big gay time. They invite a bunch of people. They give some awards.
At the Dodgers Stadium,
right. Or I don't know if they're awards, but they like, you know, to bring people who are like do good, you know, and organizations and nonprofits and things like that or whatever. And then you can buy tickets and it's a big gay night, whatever. So they had invited and we're going to honor the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, which is this group that if you live in Los Angeles, you've definitely seen at Pride. They sort of like dress up as nuns, but like kind of in drag and they face their paint their face and stuff like that or whatever.
Yeah.
But they're like a nonprofit organization and they're like out here like doing shit in the, you know, in the community, right?
Right.
Well, people got, but they've been on the wrong side of the Catholic Church for a while and therefore just like other Christians also. And so now that we're hating drag queens, Marco Rubio, of all people, the senator from Florida, got wind of this, wrote a letter to the commissioner of Major League Baseball, and then the Dodgers disinvited them.
Like a ridiculous turn of events.
which was stupid on their part, because obviously all of the other organizations, well, maybe not all of them, but most of the other organizations, you know, the LGBT Center and whoever, and LA Pride,
and
the
LA
organization
Pride
itself, right? It was like, well, we're not coming anymore,
yeah.
Which I think that they probably knew was going to happen anyway and are probably just fine not having Pride Night because they're a fucking baseball organization.
Right.
So why would they have Pride Night in the first place, which is really what I'm getting at
here. The
bigger point. Yeah. Like, and it's fine. And I think you brought up such a good point when you were like, you know, people liked Pride, you know, when it was just sort of like, you know, maybe gays trying to get married or maybe just even like being able to like live and not
right.
be gay bashed on the street. Right. Like that was, everybody was good with that Pride. Right.
Yeah.
But now, like when some of these organizations are being forced to take a stand, they're not willing to, which is fine. They shouldn't have to because they're the Dodgers,
right.
But like, don't have Pride Night.
Yeah. No, it's like we have this sort of weird tension where part of the reason that big corporate entities like the Dodgers thought it was safe to start celebrating Pride.
Right.
Is because it seemed like it was just a bunch of like upper middle class white gays who
right.
had money to spend, who you could, you know, try to go right. like get some business
from. Who would buy
from,
your beer,
who
and,
would
buy your
beer and buy your baseball
tickets.
And buy your baseball tickets.
Right.
And it was like good for business. But we are sort of in a different era of what, you know, the LGBT community is, you know, dealing with policy-wise than we were at the time. I think people maybe haven't made the transition to, like, there are current policy conversations, on like, happening right now that actually do require people's intervention because people's ability to live safely is on the line beyond just the, like, happy upper-middle-class white gays.
Yeah.
That they were so excited to welcome into the fold of consumerism. Like,
that's exactly
the, and I think that, like, corporate America, and you said, like, I was, you know, we see this a lot with, like women's feminism, women's lib kind of like being, becoming a corporate idea that then also these are companies with huge pay gaps in the end, but like, posting a message about Women's History
yeah.
Month or whatever, and you're like, fuck off.
Yeah.
It's sort of the same problem where, like, they have settled on a really like milquetoast, broadly acceptable version of what Pride is,
right.
which is like, yay, gay marriage and like,
or whatever,
you know,
right.
whatever
yeah.
it is. Like, it's
happy family. Happy, love is love.
Love is love.
Right.
Right. And they are not engaging in the sort of more radical, and I don't mean radical like it should be radical, but radical just in the sense like there are a lot of radical politics that are actually at the sort of basis of what Pride is supposed to be, at least,
right.
or what Pride was founded to be, that I think have morphed into concern about, you know, a lot of these trans rights bills
totally.
And policies. And the, just like
the intersection of,
the
of race and Pride
exactly,
also is
like,
a big thing that I don't think these corporations are really actually
no,
ready for,
of
right?
Of course not.
Of course not. Yeah.
So like there are, I think, like actual like policy conversations that need to happen where if you are somebody who supports the LGBT community, quote unquote, then you are somebody who maybe should also be comfortable with, you know, with the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgences
right.
platform as well.
Right.
And they're
you
not
have to think about what that means if you're going to have Pride Night.
Exactly.
And if you're not good with it, don't have it.
Don't have Pride Night. Because I feel like they're thinking that this is like something they can do without making a political statement. And
right.
like, don't be, Pride is supposed to be a political
statement.
It's
a political statement.
What else
right.
is it?
Right.
Just a bunch of people celebrating the idea that people can be gay like that. Nobody wearing
no.
rainbows around? That's bullshit.
Yeah.
But we are in an era of our history where Pride parades are having anti-Pride parades that are all just other gay people that are mad about
the Pride
organization. So, like,
right.
I don't know what's going on anymore.
Yeah.
Pride has been lost in a sea of
yeah.
beer ads.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
But I just, in terms of that, like, I think, obviously, like, we should be upset. But I think there's a larger issue to be upset about. And I think, like, we can probably just, like, leave the Dodgers alone. And Dodgers can just, like, carry on not having Pride Night. Like, just don't have Pride Night next
right.
year. And, like, that's
just don't worry about it.
Fine.
Yeah. Go to baseball if you like baseball. Like, they can, it's, I, some of these things, I'm like, you can't.
I know, nobody wants to go to the Dodgers.
They do have Dippin' Dots there.
They
I just want everyone to be clear about one
yeah.
thing that you can get at Dodger
yeah.
Stadium.
Yeah.
But,
and they've sped up the baseball games this year.
Oh, have they?
That?
No.
They have a pitch clock.
What?
Yeah, and then they also have rules about how many times the pitcher can throw to first to try and pick somebody off. Because you know, like, they, you know how they'll, like, buy time that way. Like while somebody's warming up in the bullpen, or I'm a baseball expert, by the way, guys. I hate baseball. It's stupid.
I love baseball because it's a chit chat sport.
It's a chit chat sport.
That's my favorite sport. But the,
the games are like a lot faster. I think by 20 or 30 minutes.
Going to a baseball game is not about watching sports. That's what I like about baseball.
But they're
games.
they're still long enough for chit chatting. Don't you worry. I went to a Cardinals game earlier this year, and it still felt too long.
Couldn't
but it was
be longer.
Shorter than. Fascinating. I remembered being. At a
you just
game.
Want to make sure that you have time to eat Dippin' Dots and like a pretzel.
You would have that.
Yeah.
You would have
that. That's the most important thing.
Yeah.
And then also, I love baseball because you get to sing together.
That's true.
I love when we all get
to
sing together.
For
yeah.
Singing. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's always nice. Yeah. But yeah, don't have Pride Night if you can't, if you're afraid of Pride.
Don't have Pride Nights. Don't make beer cans with trans people on them. No. Don't, like, if you're, if, unless you're going to back that shit up.
Right. Yeah, if your political donations also reflect this newfound progressivism, then Godspeed.
Yeah.
But that's not what's happening here.
It's not.
It's, Bud Light is not busy not donating to Republican candidates because they had Dylan Mulvaney, you know, on their
Well, and that's the other thing, too. It's like, don't come here and gaslight me for a month.
No, exactly. But that's exactly what they intend to do.
That's what they're doing.
That's their whole plan.
Yeah. Anyway.
In final news, a very concerning turn in the animal kingdom.
Right. We've brought you these stories over the years. We've talked about, you know,
just
I think
just to make
gigantic
sure that you know not to trust nature.
Right. We've talked about
tree snakes.
Tree snakes. We've talked about mice coming from the sky.
That's right.
Remember?
Remember those spiders in Australia that were everywhere?
We talked about Australian spiders. We really, you know, that and sinkholes.
We keep an eye on these things.
We keep an eye on these things. And there's something concerning going on in the animal world.
Yeah.
And I have a similar stance on this, interestingly, now that I think about it, as I do with Pride.
Oh. I'm excited to hear.
Because orcas are sinking ships right now. It's happened 3 times. And apparently it's because one orca got mad because it had a run-in with a ship. So there was like some sort of orca trauma.
Yeah.
And like she and 3 of her friends went and, you know, tipped over a ship. And now others are doing it.
Orcas are organized,
so they're
you guys.
Learning and organizing and teaching the other orcas how to turn
like
over
that.
Ships.
That's the last thing we need.
You can't be doing that.
An organized orca army.
Right. And how that relates to Pride. in a reach of a way, is that is the sea is for sea creatures to be dealing with.
Right. The sea is for orcas.
The humans, and I have always thought this, I don't like the ocean.
Right.
I don't like being in it.
Not a boat.
I don't even
in.
Like looking at it generally. It scares me, the expanse of it. We don't know what's going on out there.
Brent's
and we don't,
from Iowa. That's
and we don't,
important to clarify
right.
in this.
And we don't,
this section.
And we don't need to, right?
Don't take a boat out if you don't want to die in an orca attack.
Like, just leave the sea stuff. That's sea business.
Sea business. We call them killer whales for a reason. And people are constantly trying to convince you that orcas are just really highly intelligent, kind life forms because they don't want you to call them killer whales anymore. But I've never forgotten that the first term I learned for that animal was killer whale.
No. There's a lot of organizing going on out there, too, right? Because the other whales are doing it.
Yeah.
The dolphins
whales
are doing
very
it.
Dolphins are very organized.
I can't be mucking around out there.
I do feel like I once went on a whale watching boat in at Orcas Island. Outside Seattle. Mm-hmm. And I did think to myself while I was out there that this is not a good idea.
No.
We should not have be this close to an orca. And having gotten that close to the orca, I did not, like, a lot of people were like, wow, how beautiful. And they're beautiful, sure.
They're too big.
But I was like, this is the kind of beauty I could see from a distance.
Yeah.
And I actually don't need to be
nearby
an orca. And now, I'm wondering, this original orca attack was, I think, near Spain, off the coast of Spain.
Yeah.
But I wonder how long it's going to take for this kind of orca behavior
to get be very interesting.
To the West Coast.
It's going to be very quick. And in an alarming sort of way, as if they've been communicating in ways that we haven't yet discovered. Which they have been. And that's why, again, we don't need to know what they're doing.
Don't ask questions.
We just don't.
No. Mind your business. Stay on the land.
Bring the boats to dock, guys.
There's a reason that you can't breathe underwater.
That's right. That's it.
That's the news this week. There's probably
some
more
of
news.
It. Yeah. We both paused and looked at each other and acknowledged that it might not be the news of the week.
That's the news you needed to know this week.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I can't think of another news podcast where they warned you about the organizing orcas. And I feel like to some extent, you're getting all the news that's important
that's right.
right here at Branches Live.
Yeah.
But if there was political news that we didn't cover, that is too bad for you.
Right.
In any case, we'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Bye.